Hi, I'm Meg Riley in Minneapolis.
Hi, I'm Joanna Fontaine Crawford in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm Aisha Hauser in Seattle,
Washington.
You're listening
to a podcast of The View.
Hi, I'm Tom Shade in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
To find other episodes of The View and to subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org/VUU.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Church of the Larger Fellowships fabulous TV show, The View. We're coming to you today. This is our monthly Black Lives of UU show, and we have some great guests today. And we're going to talk about today's National Day of Action to End State Violence Against Black Women, Girls, and Femmes. We're going to talk about Black Lives UU and General Assembly. We're going to talk about the action of the public witness at General Assembly coming up. So we have a full show today of great stuff. So let's go around and get our, Meg Riley's not here right now, because which is why I'm introducing this. Meg's at a public library waiting for the Wi-Fi to come up, and she will be joining us as soon as that comes up. She's somewhere in northern Minnesota, I believe. So we'll have our other regulars introduce themselves, and then we'll go to our guests. So I'm Tom Shade. I'm retired minister, and I'm in Ann Arbor, Michigan, except right now I'm in Cleveland.
I'm Aisha Hauser, and I'm in Seattle, Washington, the Director of Religious Education at Eastern Unitarian Church. And right now I'm in Seattle.
I'm Bob LaValle, Buffalo, New York, newly minted, less than a week old, Master's in Divinity.
Oh, my goodness.
What a relief.
Welcome to the whatever.
I don't feel any smarter. It's the darndest thing.
That's the value of an education. It doesn't make you really smarter. It just makes you more humble. And our guests today, let's have our guests introduce themselves.
Great. My name is Lena Catherine Gardner. I work at the Church of the Larger Fellowship, and I'm also one of the leaders of the Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism organizing collective.
And I'm Leslie Mack. I'm founder of the Ferguson Response Network and also one of the leaders of the BLUU organizing collective. Happy to be here today.
And good morning. My name is Nora Rassman, and I work with Standing on the Side of Love at the UUA.
Great. Welcome all. Welcome all. So let's go to you, Leslie, first and talk about the National Day of Action to End State Violence Against Black Women, Girls, and Femmes. There's been another incident just recently in the news, and I would like to say her name, but I don't have it in front of me, of a woman dying in custody of the state.
Absolutely, yeah. Today is another big day within movement circles and beyond across the country and actually internationally. Folks are lifting up the names of women, girls, and femmes that have been taken, whose lives have been taken by the state in various ways, not just through police brutality, but also in custody and beyond. There's lots of ways in which the state exerts itself negatively on the lives of black women, whether it's child services or welfare or the public school systems, many ways in which black women, femmes, and girls are penalized. And the woman you were speaking of was Simone Marshall, who died in police custody. That was made big news yesterday, and certainly hoping to continue to make that story go wider as well. But today across the country, different communities are taking action towards lifting up the names of those that have been lost in their particular areas. There are actions in Florida, both in Miami and in Largo. In Largo, they're lifting up the names of the three young women, ages 14 through 16, who drowned. Dominique Battle, Linaya Miller, and Ashanti Butler. Frankfurt is lifting up the name of Janaya McMillan today. They're doing a huge petition drop with Color of Change there locally in Kentucky. In Atlanta, Durham, North Carolina, Washington, D.C. has a speak out tomorrow and also a large event today and some healing space as well. New Orleans has a huge event. Columbus is participating, as well as, of course, Chicago, where they are continuing to fight for justice for Rikia Boyd and accountability on the part of the Chicago Police Department and Dante Servin specifically. There's been some out of that. He resigned a couple of days ago. So our fight continues because he still gets his pension, and also, more importantly, can go work at any police station across the country. There's no stipulations to his resignation, and he has not been disciplined for shooting Rakia in cold blood. So in the UK, they also have something going on, and they're using a hashtag in her honor, H-O-N-O-U-R. I like to mention that because they spell it differently over there. So you guys can check that out as well. But I'd like to mention specifically two things. One is that we at BLU launched an initiative to engage UU congregations with this day of action. And I was really, we were all really pleased by the response. We had about 17 congregations that stepped up to participate. And it was really exciting to connect them on the ground with local organizers in a couple of different areas. Everyone wasn't able to participate, not because of a lack of desire, but because there didn't happen to be an action in their particular area. But those that we were able to hook up, they provided things like meals for action meetings, they did copying for actions, they provided resource support and babysitting and then some other things that were needed for some different actions. So it's just, I like to lift that up because it's a really good example of how our congregations are able to make a difference within the movement and connect themselves with Black-led organizers that are in need of being able to leverage the privilege and resources that our congregations are so full of. So one of the things that we want to do and continue to do as Black Lives of UU is to make those connections stronger and to allow our congregations to have meaningful relationship with local organizers, Black organizers, so that when things pop up or things happen in their local area, there isn't a scramble to say, who do we go to? They will have already built relationships with those who would be the people to go to. And conversely, we would have a local organizing, Black organizing community that knows they can turn to our congregations when they need resource help or when they need things that we look to outside of the movement for. So I commend everyone for doing that, and please be on the lookout for more initiatives like that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is that folks go to sayhername.blacklivesmatter.com. There's an online action that everyone can take participate in. It's actually really exciting. It's Say Her Name times In Her Honor. No you in that one because it's over here. But it actually started from some youth in New York City that were with one of their teachers put together an art project called In Her Honor, not just to honor those that were taken by police violence, which is where we use Say Her Name, but the In Her Honor piece really about lifting up people that are important to us in our lives, those that have gone from natural causes or who are still here, but as Black women, girls, and femmes deserve to be lifted up as well. So it's a really amazing thing. You can download their toolkit there at that website, again, sayhername.blacklivesmatter.com, and you can also add your own tribute with just an image and some text. It's an amazing interface that they've built through the Black Lives Matter Arts and Culture subdivision. Mm-hmm. So I would just mention all of that stuff. And I'm sorry, Asia just asked me, how can I give folks direction on how to get connected to BLUU, a congregation who wants to be part? Sure. First thing would be to join our mailing list. And if you go to our website, blacklivesuu.com, you can click the connect link at the top menu and you can join our mailing list. We'll be able to reach out to you. The second thing that folks can do is email us. Just email blacklivesofuu@gmail.com. We'll get back to you if you are looking to connect directly. And again, we'll continue to launch specific initiatives where people will be prompted and calls to action to connect. And hopefully what happens is we'll end up building a really large database of congregations that are open, willing, and able to step up in these specific ways. So we'll continue to do that work. Thanks for letting me talk about all of that stuff.
Just to go back over that, the place, if you want to contact the Black Lives of UU, that's Black Lives of UU, Black Lives spelled out UU not, at gmail.com. Is that right, Leslie? Okay, great. There it is. I see it in our little, at blacklivesuu.com on our little chat box here. So you gave us a lot of information. But certainly the National Day of Action sounds like there's been a lot of activity and a lot of focus brought to a very specific dimension of police brutality and state violence in America now. And I will just take the opportunity to say the name of Aura Rosser, who is a woman in Ann Arbor who was killed by police in, when they came to her home in response to a domestic call and shot her very quickly. Let's go to what's coming up at GA. I just saw the news that the Board of Trustees had appropriated money to help activists, Black Lives Matter activists, and Black Lives of UU get people to the to GA, which I thought was a wise use of our resources. And so, somebody, how did that happen? How did that even come about?
Yeah, I'll take this. So we, you know, Black Lives of UU are really clear that we exist to help support Black Unitarian Universalists as mm-hmm. well as, you know, call all of our people, you know, all people in our faith to deeper into justice work. And we're aware that in order to do both of those things, we need resources. And when you look at the histories of, like, black people in this country, we've been robbed of those resources, specifically, you know, financially. And so, you know, when we think about the ways, in particular, what you use can help support, you know, not only the work of Blue, but the work of the larger movement, a lot of that is going to be centered around a reallocation of those resources in a way that is working for justice. So that means, like, let's not give resources to white-run, white-led organizations that are claiming to speak for Black people or are claiming to do work in a way that's not an authentic, accountable relationship. Let's talk about what it means to fund the movement and to fund groups that are Black-led and that are building relationships in a way that is both authentic and accountable. So I actually approached Reverend Rob Eller Isaacs. I work out of Unity. They're very generous. I think both Jan and Rob really get what it means to be in an inauthentic and accountable relationship with me and also the other leadership of the local Black Lives Matter chapter here. And I said, and me and Pastor Danny Givens, who's also a part of the Black Lives Matter Minneapolis chapter, we approached him and said, what would it look like for us to get financial resources to help support Black UUs to get to General Assembly? I myself have never been to General Assembly and could never afford it. The only way I was able to was when I started working for the Church of the Larger Fellowship, and it was covered under work costs. So, you know, we sat down with Rob, and he was very opening and warm to the discussion, and, you know, also said, you know, this is an unusual way to do things. We don't typically do things in this manner procedurally. You know, we're running up against some different things. And so I, after several more meetings of just asking and asking and saying, this is what we need, this is how we would use the money, can you help us do this? Rob really heard it, and then he really championed it in discussions with, like, Jim Key and with other leadership, including other members of the board. And, you know, we really had a lot of discussions about what that partnership would look like and how the UUA could partner with, you know, the Black Lives of UU group. And I commend them for stepping up and making the commitment and saying, we're going to do this. The way in which they have committed the funds is this. It's that we will be making an ask at General Assembly. Is it the Saturday morning ask? I believe it's the Saturday morning ask. And they are really going to open this opportunity up to the rest of the denomination. So they have said, we'll guarantee the money no matter what. And it's actually $30,000 to help get Black UUs to General Assembly and to support programming for them. And we'll talk about the tracks, the Black Healing Space, the Public Witness Action a little later. And then the other 30 is going to actually be towards helping convene a group of Black UUs in the next, probably sometime within the next 18 months. And we're still working out all those details. So, you know, for me, this really is about partnering. It's about people being willing to step up and do things in new ways. And I think one of the things you see is that they were willing to say, this isn't the way we usually do things, but we're going to take a step outside of that and still commit to getting it done. Like, how can we actually make this happen? And I think that that is the spirit in which I would challenge a lot of UUs to get into, because that's how we're really going to build this movement and be able to move specifically, financial resources into black organizers who are leading this movement and who frankly need the funding and who need the support, because it really makes a big difference. And I don't know if, Leslie, if you have anything to add to that, jump in.
Yeah, I would just say that oftentimes the work that we do as black organizers is devalued, and it's the expectation is that we do this for free or out of the goodness of our hearts. So another tenet that we have subscribed to as a collective is that we pay black people for the work that they do for us. So that's a really important thing to note when you see organizers and people working with us both at GA and beyond, just to know that we value the work that they do and the work that we all do individually and collectively. And so that's another reason why funding is so important to movement work, because so often we don't get the compensation that we deserve, and it devalues us and also just doesn't allow us to live the way that we should be living and doing this work. So I would just lift that up as well as another really important reason why this the grant is particularly meaningful to us, because it does allow us to do this work with great integrity, and it's really important to us that we're able to do that.
You know, it raises a larger question for me, and I don't want to derail. I know we have a lot to talk about, but y'all have been so thoughtful about this that I would love to hear more about, like, how do you create an anti-racism organization that doesn't replicate the very dynamic that you're trying to change? So, Lena and Leslie, I know you. I would love to hear your thoughts about that.
Well, I think part is to disrupt who's normally in charge. Right? So who's normally in charge are like white, cisgender, middle or upper class men who control everything. And so the first and foremost is how do you, it's like a step up, step back thing, right? How do you ask those folks to step back, and how do you support and encourage, folks like myself, black trans women, formerly incarcerated black people, other people who experience different forms of marginalization, how do you support them to step up into leadership? Because, like Leslie touched on earlier, it's not easy work. Some of the stuff that doesn't get talked about as much that I like to lift up is how black folks were taught to shame ourselves, to doubt ourselves, to not believe in our own organizing abilities, and part of that comes from not being compensated fairly for our work. When I recently found out at a speaking gig that I was asked to speak at for free, when they had asked a white organizer a year ago to do the same thing, they were going to pay him over $1,000. And, like, I just look at, that's a message about, and one, he has less experience than me. He has less, less credentialing than me, right? Like, I have my master's degree, all these things that are supposed to, quote unquote, equal the playing field for you. So I say right off the bat, it's about leadership and whose voices are centered and whose narrative is centered, because just doing that, is a powerful way to disrupt reproducing privileges. Now, it's not the only way, and you can't just pick like a black person and be like, you should do it, right? Like, it's understanding, the nuances of, or not even nuances, but understanding like who has shared values with you and how can you work together, and what's the appropriate role for, white folks in the support role. So, that's one thing I can lift up.
If I had to pick out one thing just for the sake of brevity, I would say that, the true nature of organizing and the reason why we call ourselves a collective is that it's collaborative in nature. And there isn't a hierarchical approach to the work that we do. And so we center that very often in our conversations with each other and the work that we're trying to do together. And that's not to say we agree about everything, because that's not the case at all, but it really allows for pieces of a puzzle to come together in a way that creates amazing work, because where I fall short, Lena is there, and where Lena has some shortcomings, there's Carlton to bring up the rear. And when we need to talk about how language works, Kenny is there to step in and talk with us about that. So we spend a lot of time discussing things before we do them. And I don't, I talk a lot of times about how I don't think white folks often understand what the work is. And for me, that's what the work is the act of collaborating, the act of honoring ourselves and the work that we do every time that we go to do it. And so for me, that always creates a revolutionary collaboration, because we are standing in a very particular place. And that means sometimes work isn't quick, and that's okay. It's all right to take our time and know that the process of doing it correctly is often more important than any timeline that somebody else might have us on. So that's what I would lift up.
And one of the things that I found in my work in our UU congregations is we're super attached to patriarchy and who's in charge. And there's a paradigm shift in just what you both are saying in how we work in collaboration. And I loved how you painted the picture, Leslie, of whose strengths are in the room and how you look to each other. Because it's not, UUs are great at processing to death, but it's not the processing that lifts each other's gifts. It's each person needs to be heard, whether or not it's about gifts and because true collaboration is matching the needs, gifts. So whatever it is, and that's been part of my mission and my work, just in, how you do anything is how you do everything, which is a Zen phrase. So I'm so, the word isn't happy, but just encouraged to hear how you all are working and inspired, because that, I think, is the paradigm shift for Unitarian Universalism, if we're going to stay relevant, if we're going to aspire to diversity and inclusion in a meaningful way. We have to collaborate in a meaningful way and dismantle patriarchy.
Yes. That just reminds me of that saying, if you want, it's like, what is it? If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go right, go together.
I'm so glad I asked that question. That was amazing.
Yes. You guys have also been raising money for GA through other means. I noticed that there's been, a crowdfunding and effort for a while, and now you're also selling T-shirts. Is that going to help fund the Black Lives of UU presence at GA? And do you have a T-shirt you could show us?
We don't have a T-shirt. We don't have them yet, but you can
Them.
And you can go to the website. Those links there to purchase it. If you click on the UUA GA 2016 link on our website, you'll see them very prominently displayed. If you order them before June 1st, you'll actually have it in time for GA, so you can wear them at GA.
What do they say on them?
They say Black Lives, They Matter Here, which is a chant.
Black Lives, They Matter Here.
So you have to say it the right way, right?
I just put the link in the comments bar, too, so folks can click right on it and get these lovely shirts. They look really good.
That is one of my favorite chants.
It's such a great chant. The energy of it is really amazing. And so we thought it was a good message to bring to GA with us. And so if you purchase the shirts, those funds go to help us pay for everything at GA. And also, if you do want to donate to us, you can click the donate button on our website, and it takes you actually to the James Reeb Fund page, and you can donate through there. Just make sure you note Black Lives of UU in the comment section so that they know that you made that donation to us. And yeah, I mean, the funds that we have are great, and trust me when I tell you it's already challenging to allocate them and to ensure that we're getting as much as we can out of those funds, specifically for getting folks to GA. I was just talking yesterday, I'm having like a Movement for Black Lives flashback as we start getting into transportation and housing and everything, and I was like, I gotta do some deep breaths as we head into this planning portion of it. But I guess that's where my particular skills become useful. But yeah, so we're
they do become useful.
So yeah, we are definitely doing that. Oh, is Meg here? Hey, Meg.
Yeah, Meg is here. We're gonna bring her in. Hi, Meg.
I'm at the Virginia, Minnesota Food Co-op. So, hello, everybody. Sorry I was late, and I'm glad to be here.
Awesome.
I guess your Wi-Fi is slower there, so you won't be as your normal loquacious self, but we're glad to have you with us, Meg, always. So what's going to happen at GA? Nora, you were going to talk about that.
Yeah, we have a ton of stuff going on at GA. I'm going to turn the floor over to Nora and Lena to talk a little bit about the public witness as we move through kind of chronologically through GA, and that's on the first day on Thursday. So I'll turn it over to them for that.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Nora.
Great, yeah. Hi, good morning. So I've been really blessed to be able to, can you see me? My apologies. I've been really blessed to be able to collaborate with a phenomenal group of folks, both locally based in Ohio and then from around the country, including Leslie and other representatives from Black Lives and Unitarian Universalism, to really envision and dream up what I think is going to be a powerful public witness. So just to kind of give you some of the framing questions that we're using to think about the event, we've been really talking a lot about what's at stake and what it means for people of faith and predominantly white faith traditions to show up and commit and throw down to supporting black-led movements for black liberation. And so I think at this moment, we're really thinking a lot about what it means to move forward, knowing that the political climate continues to be tenuous, the violence against black communities continues, and Caitlin, my colleague at Standing on the Side of Love, yesterday used the language of entrenchment, noting that, you know, for many folks, you know, have been in decades-long struggles, but then for some folks who have been ascending and entering a movement over the last 2 years, we really are getting entrenched, and so there's both the sense of a lot of wins that have been happening locally and nationally, but also a lot of profound losses. And so the consistent necessity of self-care and healing and spaces to be made will definitely be lifted up. So just so folks know, it's at 5 p.m. on Thursday. The event is called State of Emergence. And the goal is really to center truth-telling and storytelling and the experiences both of folks, UU and non, who are doing organizing within Ohio, within Columbus, and then nationally. It's going to also be accompanied by an amazing musical group, Reverend Seku and the Holy Ghost, who will also be at the Blue closing worship. So Thursday at 5 p.m. in front of the Ohio State House, Lena's on the agenda, and I'm really excited for all the folks that are going to be there. If you want to see more info, if you just go to uua.org/GA, there's a link for the public witness, and we'll also be promoting it pretty widely on Facebook and social media. So look forward to seeing you there.
Yay, thanks, Nora. So I think, you know, the only thing I can add to that is I'm, you know, really honored and excited to be able to join in at the, you know, public witness action. I think for me, you know, it brings up questions that I hope can sit with as a faith around what is the role of, you know, public witness action and how can we be more connected to movement on the ground in when we do these actions. And I'm excited to be a part of it and only a little bit nervous, a little bit. So
that's Thursday at GA. What happens after that?
So after that, we do have our full program track that we will be running, and we hope as many people as possible come and join us.
Yes!
So Thursday afternoon, we have our first session, which I'll be moderating, which is the Movement for Black Lives Convening in Explicitly Black Spaces. And we're going to spend some time with panelists who attended and participated in the Movement for Black Lives Convening to talk about what happened there last summer in the context of what happens in explicitly black spaces and how important they are to movement building. And then, of course, out of that convening Black Lives of UU was born. So we'll talk a little bit about how that happened and how lasting the work that happened in Cleveland has extended in our faith and beyond as well. We also then on Friday will be having a session that Kenny Wiley is going to be presenting called Black Lives in Unitarian Universalist History, and he is going to be enlightening us about some really amazing Black UUs in the history of our faith, probably a lot that you've never heard of, and some different stories and some different narratives to talk about the role that Black people have played in our faith over time. Lena and Carlton are going to be leading an introduction to anti-blackness, and we have some amazing facilitators because this is one of the sessions where we are going to be splitting into three separate groups. We're going to have an explicitly Black portion of the workshop. There's going to be a non-Black people of color segment, and then a white folks segment, and Bob is going to be there facilitating with the white folks, and Aisha is going to be there with Joseph Santos Lyon for the non-Black people of color. We're really excited to have some conversations that will be helping to shape, but also to provide some context and some space where people can have some really honest conversations. And this introduction to anti-blackness actually leads directly to our ongoing work, which is a double session on Saturday. And we're going to start that session in those same three broken groups, which would be explicitly Black, non-Black people of color, and white folks. And then for the second half, we're all going to come back together and talk about some things that we would do collectively as a larger group. So we're really excited to bring the content to GA. We put the track together with an eye towards giving some context for the work that we do, some context for our lives as Black UUs, and then looking forward to what happens next out of the work that we've been doing and the work that we hope continues within our faith. So that's really exciting for us. If you, again, go to our website, blacklivesuu.com, and go to the GA page, there is actually links to pre-reading that we have put together for folks for each of the sessions. So we do invite you, if you're planning on attending any of them, to definitely go through that content before GA. It just gives you some additional context and background before you come into the room and help you understand a little bit more about the topics that we're going to be discussing. And then we also, throughout GA, will be holding an explicitly Black healing space, which we're also really excited about. It's a place for Black UUs to congregate together, to have some healing time. It'll be staffed by ministers that are well-versed in holding healing space, including Danny Gibbons, which I'm really excited about. And
Amanda Witherspoon.
Witherspoon, that's exactly right. So they'll both be in there, just ready to hold space if and when it's necessary, and we will be having a welcome party, welcome reception on Wednesday, I think around 5 p.m., but you'll get more about that. And then,
can I jump in with one thing there on the Black healing space? I think I've already gotten like questions from folks at my church, like, why do you need a like Black healing space? What's that about? Why aren't white people welcome there? And I just want to relate to a story of what happened to me last year at General Assembly at the CLF worship, whereby I'm the director of fundraising and membership and was helping take up our special collection. And there was actually a UU minister who pulled the collection away, looked at me like I was trying to take his money, and went to a volunteer who I had been working with to help collect money and said, and was like, who do I give this to? She's trying to take it. And the volunteer just looked at me and was like, whoa, this is really awkward. And was like, and I was like, well, I'm actually on staff at the CLF, and I'm helping to, take up the collection. And he still wouldn't give me the money and just looked at me really, awfully. And finally, the other volunteer was like, well, you can just take it back there to our other volunteer. But, like, in that moment, like, I would have loved to have had a Black healing space where I could go to, like, talk about how that felt and to, like it's already bringing up tears again, as it was. I went back to my seat and, like, sat down and, like, told Danny and, Meg about it, who just, held me and was like, I'm really sorry. And those kinds of experiences are unfortunately not unique for Black folks attending GA, and so I just can't underscore enough how excited I am for the Black healing space where we can connect and, just kind of have a, a, a place that is away from that at times. So
I noticed that you have on Thursday, you have a session which basically talks about the importance of that kind of black space and that kind of separation, which I think I think that's really a great way to start, because it helps people who may not be familiar with those kinds of experiences and kind of relate to that through this kind of old scripts around old scripts around caucuses and segregation and integration. I think it helps a lot to have that opening session. Sets the tone and sets the place for all the that follows, especially workshop sessions where we're splitting up into different groups. And
so can I ask a question related to accountability? And because I can't move on, Lena, without asking if someone had a conversation with that white minister, right, one of the leaders of our faith, who, because we are still operate in a patriarchal faith, in a paradigm, did someone have a conversation with that person and say, hey, can I help explain how this was very, very problematic?
I don't think, to my knowledge, no, because two things happened. That person promptly walked away and went back into the crowd, and I actually wasn't able to, point them out again, and I also was just, very, I just wasn't interested. I wasn't interested in having a conversation at that time, but I know that Meg was like, who is it? Who is it? Show me, I will go talk to them right now, and so I feel like, and the next time it comes around, I would be able to do that. So,
And it's not on you. I think it's for, especially to me, I do hold white ministers to a higher standard because our denomination does. There, there's a whole office at the UUA that supports settlements, and we have a system. And so with great responsibility, with great power comes responsibility, so it is not on you to do that. That is not your work. It is accomplice work, ally work.
And I think this goes back to when Lena was talking about doing things differently. When I hear people talk about explicitly black spaces and questioning the need for them, I always like to lift up that, white people tend to center their experiences as what is the norm. And so when they think of what they need in a place like General Assembly, they assume that's what everybody needs as well. And so what our challenge is to really illustrate why that's not true, and that if we are building systems and we're building events and we're building places in our faith that are meant to welcome black people, then we need to take into account what the needs of black people are. And so that's really what drove a lot of the work that we've been doing heading towards GAs, to make GA a more accepting and welcoming place for black UUs. And part of that has to be having space where, when that is not lived up to in the space of GA, we're able to address that collectively. And so that's really it's just a matter of looking at what the needs are and then creating those spaces that are needed by people that are going to be attending. And we will definitely get into all of that during that first session. I hope a lot of people come to it. It'll give you a lot of insight into how our collective came to be and why. And I can't say enough about the fact that we're going to have some varied voices. We had three meetings during the Movement for Black Lives convening over three different meals that eventually led to the collective being formed. And it was really, for me, I was working at the convening, so really the only non-work stuff I did was with black UUs. I didn't attend any sessions. I didn't go to anything else except for these three, these meals that I was able to kind of carve some time out to go to. And it was sad to hear all of these common stories of how we were feeling as black people in our faith, but also incredibly empowering to know, we weren't alone. We all have been experiencing these same things and having these same feelings, and that we have some agency to do something about it. And so our hope coming out of GA is to expand our work and bring as many black UUs that want to join us in doing this work into the collective and start really building some capacity for us to lift up their voices, their experiences, and their needs within our faith and within their individual congregations. So we're really excited about all of that. And then, oh, those are my dogs. Sorry. Go ahead, Lena.
I was going to talk about the art projects that we're not, I don't think we're totally sure where it's going to, or like, where it's, when it's going to happen, but it might be like over the course of a few days. But we're doing this art project where we're really going to talk about the power of our theology, of our principles, and then the realities of the of our cultures in our congregations and how there's a big gap there. And we're going to ask people to like dream together and visually and put up like how do we make that gap smaller? How do we bring these closer together? I'm really excited about that. Having zero artistic ability, but I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty neat, and I'm excited to see people engaging with it and seeing it visually. And then someone asked about online engagement, and I will say we have requested that as many of our sessions be live streamed as possible. Once we have the information about exactly what will be live streamed, we'll be sure to promote it and share it via all of our social media platforms so people will be in the loop on that.
And I also see a question from Ndidi about, did we already answer this?
I do want to say a quick shout out to all our live viewers who are asking questions, Ashley Boyd and Ndidi and Anne. We really appreciate that you're engaged with us and we try to pass them on as best we can.
Absolutely. Thanks for all the questions and keep them coming. And again, you could literally post on our Facebook page. You can tag us on Twitter. You can email us. There's lots of ways to ask any questions that you like of us. So please do.
That was interesting. I never quite caught, maybe because I missed some earlier shows, that the Black Lives of UU is an organizing collective. It's not just a general organization of of people who are black and who are UU, but a organizing collective, and that it came out of the Cleveland convening. So you view yourself as an organizing collective, both organizing other black Unitarian Universalists and also organizing into our predominantly white congregations. Is that, am I getting it right finally?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. The first project that we undertook was putting together the seven principles of Black Lives. And we mm-hmm. started with that because at GA, the thing that we kept coming back to is that we did not feel our congregations living up to our principles when it came to Black lives, and not mm-hmm. in the general sense, but in the really specific sense of individual Black people, where we had, I remember one conversation where someone said that they just stopped going to services. They just, it was too triggering, it was too much for them, and they just stopped engaging in that way because they felt not welcome there. And we started with those principles so that we had some grounding foundation in the work that we would move forward with doing. And so what we're able to do is draw back to those principles as we go about doing our work and ensure that whatever we're doing lives up to them. And it's been a challenge because it's not always easy to do the work, and it's, but at the same time, having that foundation is fantastic to fall back on and to kind of run through, are we living up to those things, and are we able to live out those principles in the work that we do? And so that's why we call ourselves an organizing collective, because we each are doing tons of stuff outside of this work as Black Lives of UU, but when we come together to do the work specifically as Black Lives of UU, we're looking to those principles and looking to center Black people in our faith. Yeah.
One last dumb question, can I? And that is, Lena referred to you as blue, and I'm, people are, you want to be right about this stuff. Is it okay to refer to you guys as blue, or should we, Black Lives of UU, especially folks who look like me?
The answer is yes, both and, right?
Okay. Right.
Black Lives of UU is a little bit of a mouthful for me, so I always like to just be like blue. But I think a lot of people don't, that's not like a common, people don't recognize it. So I think in more insider circles, I tend to use blue, and in with other folks, I tend to say Black Lives of UU. So I don't know how you feel, Leslie, but.
Yeah, about the same. I'm pretty.
Okay.
As long as you're engaging with us in a positive way, I'm happy. So you can call it blue or BLUU or Black Lives of UU. We're happy.
Yeah. I'm worried about my manners, you know. So what do we need to talk about that we haven't gotten to yet? I'm so excited about this GA. It sounds like it's really going to be a rich set of programs and that you guys are, you know, going to turn GA upside down from its normal.
Can I just state the obvious?
Yeah.
Which is that last year's GA was not great. And I wonder, this is an important step, it seems like, to doing it better, but I'm wondering how, you know, you as organizers are thinking about, you know, what did we learn last year from last year that we're going to try and do better this year?
Great question.
One thing I would mention is the closing worship service, which we're actually calling a closing celebration instead of a worship service. We, as Black Lives UU, we have taken that service and we'll be running it on Sunday? No, Saturday. Oh, I don't know which day it is. Anyways, whichever day the last worship service that we have, we'll be handling that. We're calling it We Ready, We Coming, and it's going to be a little bit of a different experience for those who have been to GA worship services before, and we really are hearkening back to last year's GA to start with, where we had chanting and action outside of the worship service hall, and then the folks came in, and it kind of was a weird moment there. And so we are kind of flipping the script a little bit. We're really bringing the protest movement for Black Lives into the space in a really significant way, both with the order of the service, the songs we're choosing, the sermons that you're going to hear, and of course, Rev Sekou and the Holy Ghost will be performing. And I'm really excited to really have folks experience the spiritual nature of protest action in movement spaces, which I think that the average person doesn't get to really experience. And so we're really looking to bring some of that into the space and connect people with why, as Black UUs, we feel so called to do this work. And so we'll be addressing certainly lots of the stuff that happened at GA last year in the ongoing work and the anti-blackness pieces, so you'll hear about it in both of those sessions, and then again we'll be kind of bringing it full circle with that closing worship celebration, and really excited to talk about all of that stuff. So yeah,
is there going to be an action of immediate witness opportunity for people to wordsmith resolutions and stuff?
So
like
there isn't an action of immediate.
No, resolution of immediate. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but there will be. What's that other thing? I'm so bad at these acronyms. CSAI. Whatever that thing is, there is something there, and we're in the process of working on the language of the proposal that's put forth right now. We're working with the author directly as a collective, and so there'll be an opportunity for folks to stand up on the floor to speak up for Black Lives, for sure.
Yeah, so the Sunday worship, the final worship, is at 10:30 a.m. in Columbus, so don't leave early. Get yourself to that worship. Do
really
not miss it.
Yeah, I can't say anything that, like, you really want to be there.
10:30 Sunday on the 26th, yeah.
It's going to be really good.
So,
well, you know, one of the things we've not had time to get to, we will get to next week, is that in Aisha's church out in Bellevue, Washington, they have had a tempest out there about their Black Lives Matter banner and conflict within their congregation, and we'll get to that. I think we'll try to get to that at some point next week or something. But go ahead, Lena.
I was just going to ask if you could tell the story, Aisha, like actually just what happened, because it's not just about a banner, right? Like it's
no. For the past year, a group of folks led by people of color, two Black men, have been holding signs bearing witness Black Lives Matter. I mean, huge banners, and then small signs honk if you support Black Lives Matter. And over the course of the year, every now and then, for the most part, it's actually been pretty positive, the response. every now and then someone would shout, my life is more than yours, all life matters, and it was starting to escalate the hostility. So on April 24th, a man in a white pickup truck wrote on cardboard, I hate, and the N-word, and then black lives don't mean, and then an expletive, and threw it at the group. Now that Sunday was a large, the group has actually been getting larger. It's anywhere between like 5 and sometimes 25 people. That Sunday, our coming of age class, our 8th and 9th graders joined them. And this was thrown, we called the police, the chief of police, captain of the police came, because initially the first officer I called said, oh no, this is this person's First Amendment rights, and I calmly explained for 20 minutes how it wasn't. It was a hostile act. So the higher-ups got involved. 2 weeks later, our banner, Black Lives Matter, joined the discussion here. Our big yellow standing on the side of love banner was slashed. The black part was slashed, so all you could see was Lives Matter. And last night we were on the TV news. Two Seattle stations came and covered it. So we have someone targeting the church. There was another church targeted last year, or maybe earlier this year, and their banner was stolen. First it was, I think a Presbyterian church, or United Church of Christ, I don't remember which, but it wasn't a UU church, and the police is investigating on whether or not those two incidents are connected. So.
And how's that been playing inside the congregation?
It's interesting because for the most part, thank God our interim minister, Reverend Elaine Beth Parasalua, has been amazing. She just started a few weeks ago. For the most part, there's been support, and there are some white folks who are uncomfortable with Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. So we're having multiple discussions with folks that are, we span the spectrum. Folks who get it and are on board and willing to risk, and others who don't want to be uncomfortable. So it's an interesting, we run the gamut here in the congregation.
That's a pretty large congregation, right?
Yeah, we're just under 500 members. Yeah, we're a big, pretty big congregation.
Wow.
And where is the congregation taking things next, Aishel? Like what's
so happening? What's interesting is, without giving too much away, there's been how people will react to something. So there is, the congregation's in transition. I mean, there's an interim minister just started. So what I've suggested is that a group of white folks need to have a conversation first about because there's many, many layers of what's happening. The people of color, thank God we have a caucus group already that meets once a month. So we actually, our next meeting is Monday, thank heavens, because we need to get together and talk. So we are, there are many layers of gatherings. So the folks of color are getting together to talk about how we maintain ourselves in this system, how to move forward. I've asked Elaine to lead and the board president, incoming board president, to lead the white folks in a conversation of, we need to start talking about impact, not intent. I really have let go of the good intentions BS. I'm not going to curse because I just think what happens is I've experienced that people use it as a license to say anything they want and then say, oh, well, I have good intentions. Donald Trump has great intentions. So it's now about impact. So I've absolutely asked folks to please stop using the intentions card. And please start thinking about what your impact of what you are saying and doing is. So that's where we're taking this kind of one step at a time, I hope, anyway.
That's super interesting. Yeah, the intent piece is pretty critical, and it's such a, delineator between, I hate to use, just phrasing, but being woke and not being woke is this idea of intent. And also matching that up with expectations of people of color as well. So it's a tough thing to deal with, and I think also that white folks are so ill-equipped to deal with being attacked, I put quotes around that they don't really know how to deal with the emotions that get stirred up by these types of aggressive actions towards them, because in their daily lives they really haven't been conditioned to understand it, to process it, to deal with it. And it's been, for me, pretty interesting seeing, I think that we launched that visibility campaign over a year ago, to see so many churches that have been dealing with vandalizing and aggressive acts towards them as a congregation, and how they sort through those feelings and what happens. Do we retreat? Do we press on? Do we double our efforts? How do we respond in the face of such forceful and specific deliberate attack? And I always like to say, I hope people can take a little bit of time to step outside of themselves and realize that being Black in this country, being a person of color in this country, that we are frequently meant to deal with acts of aggression, whether Lena being made to feel less than in a very simple moment at GA or a specific slight at your own congregation. It all is difficult to deal with and it all hurts. And one other myth I like to always lift up that UUs tend to fall back on is this idea of niceness, which is that we're all really nice people and we're nice in the world and we try and do nice things. And all of that's true. But I always like to say, if I'm having a one-on-one conversation, anybody can be nice. I haven't met a single person in my life, or very few, that if I'm just talking to them with myself, they don't come off as very nice. But that doesn't negate the actions that they undertake outside of those one-on-one conversations. So I think a lot of these incidents end up allowing those conversations to happen within our congregations, which really would be in a vacuum without these unfortunate experiences. So,
I think it's very interesting what you're saying about white Unitarian Universalists being accustomed to not receiving any aggressive action toward them. And part of the whole thing about many churches is that the church was founded in order for people who didn't believe in God, right, and were out of step with the surrounding community to look normal, right? They were in a church, right? So they expect that they have this kind of camouflage of cover, right? We're respectable people. We think really differently, but we're respectable. Everybody treats us like we're a church, which we are, but it's also, sometimes this little funny thing. I always remember down when I did the civil rights pilgrimage that the Jackson, Mississippi Unitarian Church rebuilt their whole front door system so that no one could shoot in the front door. Right at the height of the civil rights movement, and that just living with that kind of expectation what you do is going to possibly put yourself in danger is something that most of our churches outside of places like Jackson, Mississippi have. They don't think about anybody so much as like slashing a banner outside their church that they're ever going to have that kind of aggressive thing happening to them. So, well, I think we're about out of time at this point. I don't know. We haven't gone exactly.
We are out of time.
We are out of time, I think. Last words from anybody else other than me?
Yeah, I think one of the things that this situation brought up for me is how this issue of respectability, and you use often let, or I perceive them to let, the way something looks or the fear of the way something might look get in the way of loving each other. Mm-hmm. And I know like when situations like that happen, the people that help me feel the most are just the people who can let go of that fear of saying or doing the wrong thing and just embrace me in love. And so I really want to leave us, with a challenge of how can we do that in a way that's not like damaging, right? But also just like knowing that in these situations, like the Black congregants at that church, other congregants of a color need to be held with more love than in other times because they're under attack. And, like Leslie said, it's hurtful, it's painful, and it's hard. And I think the beauty of our spiritual community and what moves me so much about my UU faith is like in those times in my life when it's been the hardest, it's been the spiritual community that has come and held me and been like, what do you need? And so how can we do that in these challenging times and not get paralyzed by fear, but coming with a spirit of, I love you and what do you need?
The only thing I would say to end is just to really lift up my fellow Blue organizers, Lena and Kenny and Carlton and Alandria, and the work that we've all done together, and just really hope people understand that we all have other jobs and we all have other commitments, but we decided to take time out of all of those things to come together and do this work with no idea of its reception, with no understanding of the support we would or wouldn't receive. And I'm really proud of what we've done thus far and really, really excited to expand and bring more Black UUs into the collective to continue this really important work within our faith. And I just love all of them so very much. So that's what I'd like to say.
Love you too.
Well, thank you all, and thank you for the work you're doing. And with that, we will say thanks, and we'll see you next week. Oh, Bob, what do we have up next week? Do we know?
Next week we have the founders of a smartphone application called Happy, which their intention actually is to The application will offer emotional support from everyday people on demand, and they're trying to address the emerging epidemics of loneliness and stress.
My goodness!
Excited to hear about that.
All right, so people are going to have something other than watch The View to make themselves feel better. All right, thank you all, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.